This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and this morning I'm joined by Sheriff Odenbar and Police Chief Bassett. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for spending some time. We're going to talk today about the active shooter training that you received last week. I've already spoken to Joe Deedon from TAC1, and I'll post this as a companion piece to that feature. But we know that small rural communities are not immune from what we would consider to be big city problems, and unfortunately in that, active shooter scenarios are, you know, as much a potential here as maybe in any other place in America. And that's been recognized by our school district and by yourselves, both your agencies, and there's been some active shooter training, and this was the third year that TAC1 have been in and have helped to train your guys, to train staff and students as to what they should do and also probably what they shouldn't do in an active shooter situation. Do you really support this? It's been here for 3 years. Are you still finding that there's benefit to do this?
I think that any training that we can get our hands on, like specifically active shooter training, I think we had talked about before, where it doesn't just, for us, it doesn't just apply to the school. Like we have traffic stops that we worry about. We have the courthouse, churches, all those things. Like this kind of applies across the board for that. So I think it's, I hope it keeps going. Charles Oski, the superintendent, jumped us on board, and we are so fortunate that he included this training for law enforcement. So we're hoping that continues. But
I think with the amount of experience we have here, we can continue this training even on our own. We've already talked about purchasing certain equipment that we already have that we're going to add on to that, where we can then go to whether it's the old courthouse or the hospital, or because like Rod said, it's not just the school. It could be a traffic stop. And we kind of got into this mind frame a couple weeks ago with the incident up in Sheridan. When we first heard what was going on, everybody sprung into action. We had a plan. We were on the interstates exits, and so we were ready to assist with another agency, even that didn't even happen here in Johnson County. So I think part of this training kind of helps us get into that mindset and into that role as well.
So what is it specifically about this training that you feel is so valuable?
How realistic it is.
What actually happens?
We're using simunitions, so we're using our actual rifles, our handguns. Basically, it's just there's a piece that's inserted into the rifle that allows us to shoot simunitions, which is same cartridge as an AR-15. It just shoots an AR-15 paint bullet, basically.
That so probably hurts nonetheless.
It doesn't feel good. It does not feel good. We wore everything that we wear, we insisted, hey, wear your vest, wear your uniform, because you want to train like you work every single day. So, you know, we were pretty much just like we would show up to work. We had our vests on. Everything was there. You have your rifle, you have your handgun. And so, when you have rounds flying by you, and kudos to all the kids that showed up. We had a lot of kids that volunteered their time. I've recruited my daughter and some of her friends. And so for them to come in and be role players, so now you just don't have the call. You have the shooting, you have the kids screaming, you have bodies laying in the hallways.
And it is indeed in a school, isn't it?
It is. Yes. It was at Meadowlark Elementary this year, which is also nice because now we've covered 3 schools in 3 years. So you're not used to it, right? And so having those kids yelling and screaming and calling for help and crawling on the floor, and you're stepping over and you're trying to find the shooter, it gets the heart rate up. Like I think I said before, you know it's a scenario, you know it's kids that you know that are acting, and you know that they're paint, but man, it gets the breathing going, the heart rate going, the adrenaline going. So when you can train like that and you can make it as close as real, you know, as possible, I think it's invaluable.
And so it's more than just police and sheriff's departments that were involved. It's a multi-agency approach. Can you describe how that happened this year?
I I don't know how it happened. I do know that Game and Fish, we had a representative from Highway Patrol, the PD, the Sheriff's Office, and the County Attorney's Office. So, yeah, they're like, and we encourage and we do it. We don't go with our agency. We're teamed up with whether, like the Sheriff's Office, whether it's a PD officer or a Game and Fish or Josh Jensis, he ran through the scenarios as well.
And of course, he's with the County Attorney's Office.
Correct, yeah. So it's encouraged and we follow through with it where we pick other agencies to go through that scenario with, because it's likely that both will be there. It's likely one will be from the PD and one will be from the SO or Highway Patrol or Game and Fish. So instead of like knowing how each time everybody reacts, you switch it up to where you have a new partner, and it makes you just train with the other people that you don't normally train with.
But presumably the county attorney wouldn't show up to an active shooter. No, what is the purpose of their presence?
I think just the knowledge of how officers react to those situations. I think it's very important that our county attorney knows, I mean, that's a use of force, so they understand, and they might be able to describe that better in court if it came down to, you know, an instance like that where we have and it's not just something to that extreme, but to show how fast and how quick you have to make those decisions. Anybody can talk about it 2 weeks later when you watch a body cam footage and say, well, I would have done that different. Of course, you had two weeks to review it and think about what you can do. Now put yourself in that same situation with 3 seconds or 2 seconds to make that decision. And I think that helped us and helped them realize how difficult it can be to make those split-second decisions.
And of course, I think we all can imagine how we think we'd like to respond mm-hmm. in that sort of a situation.
Sure.
Is there quite a difference? Have your officers... So when they actually found themselves, even though they know it's a simulation, were they quite surprised as to how they felt and how they responded?
Full
disclosure, in the second scenario, you're taught a certain way. You're going to the intel. So I enter the school. Rod is my backup. He's coming in through the front. We're not together. I radio him where I'm at. I have some bodies on the ground. I hear yelling and screaming down the hallway. So you're taught, you move to where the threat is. And so as I'm clearing the hallway, and you do it very fast because time is of the essence. So you go with your intel. And as I cross the door and look to my left, the shooter was to my left, and I took a round to the neck. So,
whoops.
Yeah. It's realistic. I stayed in the fight. I ended up neutralizing the target, because then that trains me, whether you're hurt, not hurt, you stay in the fight. And then that gave Rod an opportunity to then take, also get rounds downrange. But yeah, I mean, we're not there judging, you want to make those mistakes there, right?
Well, and some of our best learning experiences do come from
Absolutely.
Our mistakes.
100%. And, we've been doing this, between the two of us over 50 years and still learning. And so, and plus when I come back and, of course, I get a ribbing from the guys because, but that's good because that's what we need, right? You're not going to be perfect. It's never perfect. It's never going to be the way you think and plan it's going to be. So you train your brain to then slow down, take a breath, react the way you need to react. And then under stress, you're going to find that piece of training that's stuck in the back of your brain, and you're going to do what you need to do. So.
And it's very hard to slow down. Yeah. Like it's like where the chief said that he goes by a door. There's a fine line between checking every classroom in that incident where to going right to the target. Well, it's easy to say you're just smoking by these doors, running as fast as you can, but there could be two shooters. We don't know. There could be one. The shooter could already be down. All that information we don't know. So, it was good. Charles would get on the intercom,
mm-hmm.
and he did a a good job of this stressful talk. Like, there's a shooter, kind of a description, not really a description, kind of where they're at, but not really where they're at. You know, so it's, you go in there knowing some things, but there's more things that you don't know than what you do know. And like Sean had no idea that the shooter was in that room. I mean, so we're law enforcement, when they respond, we're set up for failure. Like, it's the unknown is the worst part of it all. And
I mean, you're sacrificing yourself in a way. Let's be honest. You are the, you have to go in there and stop that threat, and you can't do it safely. I mean, you can do it. You're playing the odds. Like with my scenario, I knew that I couldn't stop at every doorway because they're screaming, which means there's somebody getting killed at the end of that hallway. So you don't have time to go through and methodically check every single room. You're playing the numbers. And on that day, that number was not in my favor. And that happens all the time. So, yeah.
Well, one scenario, I mean, one event, which is consistently pointed to as a sort of a disaster response, was Uvalde. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was almost like a freeze moment, and everybody lost their sense of who was in command, what they were supposed to do next. It wasn't that the will was not necessarily there, it was just that the chicken was somewhat headless.
Yeah, and that kind of came from a little bit, I'm assuming, training. I mean, I haven't broken that down piece by piece, so I don't want to, you know, you hate to beat people up on things I don't know the full story for, but yes, the response, obviously we learned a lot. But that's where the response is, too. It doesn't matter who shows up. You don't need me. You don't need Rod. You don't need this sergeant. Like, you're there, and you're a single guy. You're going in. Like, I don't care if you're the lowest guy on the totem pole. Like, if you're off duty, you show up. You're going in to take out that target. And so I think that's what they're trying to push is the old days, like where I came from, a huge agency. You back out. You surround it. You wait. You wait for the lieutenant to get there, the shift sergeant. You call SWAT. SWAT takes 45 minutes to get there, and you just surround and hold. Like, those days are over.
Yes, it's changed.
It doesn't matter who, and it doesn't matter what rank. Like, you get two guys there, you go in, and you just go in as two guys going in there to stop this killing spree.
And well, so, and of course, the shooter is not going to stop just because nobody cares. Haven't got your lieutenant there.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I mean, they're still there to do the, all the damage that they had intended.
Correct.
What are the particular challenges of working in, responding in such a small rural community? Are there benefits and difficulties?
Personnel, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times where we each have one or two people working during the day. And so, yeah, I mean, our deputies, Sean's officers could be on a different call. Our deputies could not be close. So, I mean, the last swatting call, we were there quick, but it was...
Describe swatting.
Swatting is where dispatch receives a call that there's an active shooter at the... like, for example, this one was at the high school. It was spring break, wasn't it?
This time last year.
And it was across multiple locations as well, outside of Johnson County, but it was a simultaneous call that affected numbers of different schools.
Yeah, Sheridan got it. Like, it was just a... like a domino where every county would get it. And so, like, when that call came out, I think we were there within 2 minutes, which we're fortunate, you know, that we had the personnel to go. But I think that's a big thing is we don't have 10 officers on the road or 10 deputies on the road. And you just got to be in the right place at the right time. Fortunately, even though that was a swatting call, we were there quick. And that's our course of action is everybody goes. And everybody goes as fast as they can. And the first one that gets there is the first one that goes in. So you can't plan for it, I don't think. Like, you can make a 1,000 different scenarios and that call would be a different one. So... I think our best course of action is just what we're doing. Everybody goes, the first one there goes in, and as they come, they go in behind. And communication, you know, that's like, as long as we're communicating, like,
which can be difficult if it's multiple agencies because we're not on the same channel, and you know, that can be tough in itself, just being able to communicate with each other. But then, you know, the after action thing, we all talk about going in and, you know, think about what happens afterwards, even when the suspect is neutralized or in custody. Think about the amount of personnel we need afterwards, whether with the EMS and locking the scene down. And, you know, it, I mean, it's just... It's,
so would there be a response more broadly from other counties?
Absolutely.
I mean, Gillette and Sheridan County?
Well, that and DCI.
DCI.
Like, yeah. We wouldn't do any of the investigation if... Yeah.
We were involved.
Yeah, Sean's involved or the sheriff's office is involved. It would be DCI that does an investigation on all those. So,
but yeah, we would be reaching out to anybody that could help.
And for a whole community traumatized, I mean, an event like that, especially in a small and tight-knit community, would be very challenging for us. For
don't
us all.
Ever wanna...
Do you think that it's a a bonus or a detriment that most of your officers actually, you know, have children and, you know, is that a help or a hindrance?
Ways,
yeah. Like the accident, the rollover that we had a year and a half ago, and four high school students, the way it came over the radio, four high school students just rolled the car and they're ejected. Well, we all have kids and I have a kid there. And so driving to that call in my 25 years was probably one of the worst ones, thinking that it might be mine. Never had that before. So, to me, but then I could say, well, I mean, I'm going to protect anybody's kid, but knowing if my kid's in that school, maybe that changes things, and you're definitely, I don't know. I mean, that's not fair to say, but I don't know. Maybe I think it helps and hurts, just because if you walk in that school and you see one of your own kids, or your kid's best friends that you're very close with, and you can't stop because you have to go. Like, I don't even want to imagine.
Do our neighboring agencies have similar training?
I'm sure they do. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I would expect that they do.
So what do you think are the most important things in an active shooter response, and what would you like the community to be doing should word gets out very quickly? A lot of people have scanners on. Word would be out very quickly. What would you like the community's response to be?
Yes, as hard as it would be, all it does is create more chaos when people start showing up at schools. One of my concerns is that somebody shows up and they're armed, thinking they're going to help, and that can really create more chaos, because now somebody shows up armed and somebody says, oh my gosh, there's another person with a gun and he's in the parking lot. Can you imagine what that's going to do to a response? And so that would be my biggest thing, is like, we are trained. We will handle the situation and, you know, wait for information, because we'll get information out. I mean, and I can't blame a parent for wanting to get to the school to see if their kid's okay. But knowing that, we've already have it planned with, you know, whatever school it is. We have the staging area kind of set right now. We have a kind of like an incident command where we would set up. And so I think we would utilize the school district and buses, and, you know, we have a lot of plans for it. Just don't go straight to the scene, because that would just create a bigger problem.
Yeah, we're going to do our best to resolve the situation. And like Sean said, I don't know everybody in Johnson County. Somebody shows up with an AR in the parking lot, our resources, part of those are going to go to that person versus the response of the school. So, Sean said, I mean, if it's my kid or my grandkid, like, yeah, I'm going to want to go. But that's why we're in the positions that we're in. We're the ones that are supposed to do that, or that are going to, I mean, I'm not going to say we're perfect, but we're going to go in. And how it ends, nobody knows, but we'll do our best to take care of it.
And of course, this would be a very confusing scenario from what you described earlier, Rod. You know, it's the lack of knowledge is really the biggest problem. You don't really know what you're dealing with. And to have somebody else show up, you know, wherever it is, however well-meaning they are, you know, adds another level of confusion to what's going on, and something else that needs to be responded to.
Yeah, I think if we need help, we'll ask for help. I think think that's probably the best way to put it. If and I don't know that it's just a resident should be put in that position. They want to be there, but should they? Probably not. So
without getting into too much detail, some kind of call comes in of an incident of an active shooter in a school, maybe, but it could be anywhere in town. What happens?
We go. And we go fast.
Send everybody, and that is, you drop what you're doing and you go.
And is there community communication built into that program?
At that point in time, we have one goal, and one goal only, is that's to stop the threat. And so until that threat is stopped, dispatch is going to be inundated with phone calls. That's another thing. Like, if we get a call like that, we're there. Like, we don't need, 30 people call 911. Like, when we get that initial call, we go, we're there. So again, that kind of reverts back to the after action. Like, when that call comes out, until that threat is neutralized, and that is our number one goal. And then we will work from there. Obviously getting information out as soon as we can is the second, right? But number one is neutralize the threat, take care of casualties. And that's what we're going to do.
So, Sheriff, you mentioned something before we started this conversation about how there are signs and signals that somebody may be building up to carry out such an event. Can you explain a little bit about that? And what should people be watching for, and when do they know? How should they know that this is turning into something significant that needs to be?
Well, I don't know how you know. I think there are signs, whether it's the parents that are seeing the actions of their kiddo, or something is posted on social media if it doesn't pass the smell test, it doesn't pass the smell test. Like, it should be concerning. And if there is those type of comments, whether it's made, I think there was at a business that somebody had said something about shooting or something, they call, we go. And it's kind of what I've been reading is, more often than not, there are signs, but whether the parents or the people that see that are kind of in denial or maybe overwhelmed with those comments or those actions, but those need to be reported. So, it's not just, I'm going to go shoot up a school. There's things that lead up to that, like anger issues or dark statements, whether it be to people or on social media. Like, we're seeing more of that, that gives an indication that there's something bad that's going to happen. Does it always happen? No, thankfully no, but there are signs. So pay attention to those signs.
And of course, there were parents, recently there were a mother and father of a shooter who were actually prosecuted and were sentenced for basically being negligent and not being responsible in terms of noticing those signs, but more to the point, enabling a firearm to be in the possession of that particular young person. We live in a community where firearms are commonplace. Do you think that people should be considering differently how they are storing their firearms?
I don't think so. Like, I don't know. I'm a firearms guy, and so is Sean. I think it's how you teach the kiddos, and they know that every gun is loaded, even though they're not loaded, those type of things. A lot of people nowadays, they have gun safes and they store their firearms in those safes, but I don't think we micromanage those people. I think you teach your kids to make good decisions. That's probably the biggest thing, but I would guess that there's quite a few people in Johnson County that have a firearm in the home for protection. And I mean, you don't lock that gun up and not have access to it. And you wouldn't be fast enough if somebody would come into your home if you had to go to the gun safe and
unlock it with the combination.
Which I've forgotten, about 14 times. But I don't think there shouldn't be restrictions. It's just common sense. Teach common sense. And
I think we have a good communication with the schools. So if somebody makes a statement or the school has some concerns, they have a safety plan. We're involved in that safety plan. They're evaluated. If there's need, we may go to the home and make contact with the parents. Hey, this is what happened. You might, do you have any unsecured firearms? Because, and that's the big thing. Well, I didn't mean it. I was just joking, right? But we don't joke like that anymore. You can't make those statements. You can't go to the airport and say, oh, I have a bomb in my bag, right? I mean, same thing. That's where we're at now. So, we have good communication with all our administrators at the school. So if they have an issue that they think deems further investigation, they call us. So we have a real good communication.
If somebody has the nagging, persistent concern that somebody is behaving more strangely, may be more inclined to do something like this, who should they call?
Well, I mean, the problem with calling law enforcement right off the bat, I mean, I think that comes down to what Rod said and parenting. And I mean, we're talking about mental health sometimes, right? So there's plenty of counseling. I would say, one, find a professional that can come out. I mean, we can go and talk to people, but when people look at us in uniform and we show up, they automatically think they're in trouble. So, if need be, I think, reach out to those resources for mental health, whether it's a teacher, counselor, whoever it may be. I think we come into the picture when it's probably too late, mm-hmm. I think. So if we're involved, then it's gotten to a point where it needs to be above us anyway, where somebody has a little more control,
Yeah, and I like 99% of this, I would imagine, is mental health driven. Like, they're obviously in some sort of crisis. So as cops, we can talk to people and we've been trained to de-escalate, but there's obviously bigger issues that we can't deal with. And a counselor or a mental health professional, those would be the ones that's their lane. So our lane is, like Sean said, is probably too late for that.
Speaking about lanes, I asked Joe Deedon from TAC1 what his opinion was about arming teachers, and he was in favor of that, with caveats. Do you share his opinion?
Thanks, Kate. I guess I'm kind of like Sean. I'm like 50-50. There's a lot of benefits, but there's also a lot of concerns. And I guess, if there's training and law enforcement knows who are the ones that are trained in the school, that would make a big difference, I would think. There's a lot of risks, but there's also a lot of benefits to it. So I'm going to officially ride the fence on that. We know, just experience who should have a firearm and, like, should be, like, is a responsible firearm owner. Like, we know, and there's people that we question whether they should have a firearm too, but
or put in that position, think they could help. And ultimately, that's up to the school district anyway, right? They're going to make their decision based on who they think they should have, right? That's mm-hmm. not even our call. So if it was to happen, I would roll with it. If it remains the way it is, I'm kind of with Rod. I just, without us being able to make that decision, right? I know every single one of my guys, how they shoot, because, three of us were just up the range yesterday with a, very dynamic qual course for just the PD that we were kind of coming up with just after having that training. So we did some live fire stuff yesterday. So yeah, if it was one of those guys, I can speak. If I see their scores, I see how they shoot, I see how they move. You know, you got a guy teaching math, and all of a sudden they need to be, you know, I don't know. What's their mindset? Like, I just don't know. You know, there's so many questions before I think I could even go one way or the other on that.
The not knowing part. The Constitution says that we have a right to a firearm, which we do. I agree with 100%. But we also have to figure out who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. And those, that might be difficult. I mean, we go in and have, you know, we're going to call with a person with a gun that is shooting up the school. Like, if you go and there's a good guy with a gun and you don't know, our mindset is to neutralize the threat. And if you hesitate for 2 or 3 seconds, you might get shot. If you shoot too soon, you're going to get crucified. So I guess I don't know where the happy medium is there. For sure, you know, we can't have an SRO officer in every school. Where finances are limited, and I don't even know how that works with personnel, but there's got to be a medium in there. I just don't know where it's at.
Is it a budgetary issue that you don't have an officer in each school?
Well, it's kind of sad to say, but I think it's twofold. It's budgetary and it's also personnel. Like right now, law enforcement, when you put an opening out there, you know, 5-6 years ago, you'd get 10 or 12 applicants. Now it's not.
Why do you think that's the case? What's changed?
Well, it's anti-police.
Yeah, look at the sentiment across the nation. And yeah. Who wants to go and have to go through that situation, put their life on the line, then get Monday morning quarterback to no end, right? Because it's one bad officer that made, you know, like bad apple. I mean, everybody's got them, but yeah. And then now it's just everybody's seems like they're against the police instead of, you know, that's one blessing about being here. I feel like we're supported very well here.
For sure.
But coming from a place where you were the enemy.
Well, look at Officer Krinke's funeral and the outpouring from
absolutely
across
amazing
our region, you mm-hmm. know, and across the state in support of mm-hmm. not only that family and what they endured, but also, you know, there was tacit support for law enforcement mm-hmm. within that
and
as well.
And the hiring process. I mean, you get those applicants, okay, you finally do get those applicants. Well, they now have to pass a very rigorous background check. Polygraph, psychological evaluation. Like, it's not like any other job where you just kind of sign up. I mean, you're put through the ringer kind of to make sure that we're not lowering standards. And I think that's one thing that Rod and I both agree on, that you kind of see, you know, you got departments 500, 300 officers down, right? So you have somebody, and we refuse to hire anyone that doesn't meet that standard.
Are you at full?
I am
fully staffed right now.
Yeah, I am in dispatch, but I am one down in patrol. After Sergeant Krinke's death, I had a brand new officer. After 2 months, we had him in FTO, and he thought he was safe here, and his wife did, and he came in the next day and resigned. So there it is again. But don't blame him. Just it takes a very certain person to do what we need to do, and then I realize that it doesn't matter if you're in Buffalo, Wyoming, or Baltimore, Maryland. Like, the threat is there. Yeah, someday you may leave and not come home. So,
yeah, and you had that pressure, that stress in the job, and then the trend is slowly law enforcement is getting their qualified immunity taken away. And when that happens, Colorado's that way. Mm-hmm. When that happens and you're both, I guess, if we do something criminal, we're held accountable for it. You can be sued civilly for those things. And I don't know that a guy making a split-second decision that thinks that it may cost his house that he's put 20 years of equity in, and he could lose it in a like two shakes of a lamb's tail. Like, would I want to do that? I don't. Again, probably not. And that's the trend. Is you know, there's maybe not a criminal element to some of the legislation that's coming out, but there are civil penalties. I view that as they're just easing in on our qualified immunity. And like, it's tough to get law enforcement officers nowadays, and then you take that away from them too. Like, I don't think it's financially responsible to do that when we're paid well, but in most instances you could go out and get a job for the same amount of money and zero amount of risk. Like, we get questioned a lot on decisions that we make, but we also make those decisions in seconds. So walk a mile in our shoes is what I say, and we'll see where it all works out. And
law enforcement was generational too. I mean, it was granddad was, now dad is. I want to be, I want my kids to be. And now it's like, don't do it. Do not. So if one of my kids came to me and asked me, "Dad, I want to be a cop," I would probably tell him, as much as I love this profession and I had so many good years, man, I don't know.
So moving back to active shooting, what comes next with training? We've had 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hoping this goes forward?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we do. And I'm sorry. I was about to say, if it doesn't, we've already had meetings and started the ball rolling with, like I said, enough experience in our own departments that we could stage something like that easily. Just it's a matter of buying some equipment. The nice thing about having somebody else come in is they set it all up. It's there. It's...
Well, it adds a difference of dimension of gravitas and significance, doesn't it? When it's not familiar completely, and they're challenging you in ways that you maybe don't consider you need to be challenged. Mm-hmm. You know, just simply because you're in your own space.
And when you have a stranger judging you on your actions and watching you and evaluating you and your guys and how we work, it's different, right? That's another stress level. If I come up with the training myself and know what's coming and whatnot, and the guys are give each other a hard time for, you did this wrong or that, you know, it's just a different level because it's a complete stranger putting this on. So,
well, Chief, Sheriff, thank you very much indeed for spending some time really explaining active shooter scenario and what it means to your agencies and how you're preparing to keep this community safe.
Yes, thank you.